Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Wicked Darkness. Please make sure to follow us so you can keep listening to our episodes. If you want to see more of us, give us a like on Facebook and Instagram, as well as our YouTube channel, SoupHit2009.
All right, so I'm Kathy. I'm the host. With me tonight, we got Leah, we got Brian, and Rich.
Hey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So we've already been kind of talking about it. We're talking about John Wayne Gacy tonight. And Brian, you were saying that your wife lived in the same neighborhood as one of Gacy's.
Yes, his name was Rob. Yes, Leah and I were just talking about this. His name is Rob Peast. I think.
Yes.
But my wife is from Des Plaines, mm-hmm. and she was in a subdivision, and he lived like a block and a half away, but he was taken from a pharmacy. I believe it was Toohey Avenue. I'll have to ask her for sure. Mm-hmm.
That's the pharmacy he worked at, right?
Yes. I think I'll ask.
He was working, if I remember the story correct, he was working. It was his jacket that he gave to one of the other girls that worked or something like that. Yeah. And then he had pulled him out. John Wayne Gacy pulled him out of the pharmacy. Not pulled him, but, you know, was talking to him or whatever. And it was like end of the night, the end of his shift. And mm-hmm. was trying to get him to come work for him or something like that. Because he did construction at that point, right? It was a construction mm-hmm. company.
Yep.
So John Wayne Gacy was born March 17th, 1942, in Chicago, Illinois. And he came from a blue-collar family. Fairly normal. If normal is even a word nowadays. Just an ordinary family. Nothing that stands out, but he had this tendency for
sodomize.
And he ended up getting married, had children. He went to Iowa. Why did he go to Iowa? I never understood that. Was he going there for
our
yes,
just trying to make it all loop together,
one big loop
together. Yeah,
so he was his wife's family from Iowa. I don't understand why he went to Iowa. Do you know, Leah?
I think if I remember correctly reading the book, he had gotten in trouble in Chicago and ended up going to Iowa to kind of start over.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because he had already had been, when he was in Chicago, he had already been involved in the sodomy and spent 18 months in prison.
I just find it weird that he went to Iowa. Why wouldn't you go to Wisconsin? You know, or even...
Why would you want to come to Wisconsin? Well, I'm sorry. But...
Well, there's not much in Iowa. I mean, we've been to
that
Iowa.
That is true.
So, yeah. I mean, really, what's the difference? I mean, he's closer to his family if he was here in Wisconsin versus all the way across the state to go to Iowa. But he ended up getting in trouble in Iowa, too, though. Where he ended up doing some real time in Iowa in the prisons. Yeah, he was a teenage boy that he had sexually assaulted. 1968, he was convicted uh-huh. of sexual assault of a teenage boy. And then he was confined to the Iowa State Men's Reformatory. And that's where he was forced to undergo psychological evaluations. But he wasn't there very long. He was there for like a couple of years and then he was out, which is funny because it's like you did all these bad things to this kid and you get out on good behavior, I guess.
You see that too in 1970, 2 years later, he was arrested again.
Of course, because, you know, yeah. he can't control his appetite for the monster that's growing inside him, you know, right. That he's got to feed that monster.
Mm-hmm. You see that pattern, though, in a lot of these cases. You see that where they're in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder, at what point could that have been stopped?
Right.
You know, if something would have been, someone would have intervened or something else could have happened in there to put them on a different path, if that's even possible, you know. But, you know, some people it's probably not possible for them to change their habits. You know, once they get in, they're in. And that's kind of seems like how this one is, you know.
Well, like him, he was almost addicted to it.
What's that?
Like it, almost like an addiction to it.
Sure, yeah. You know? Like I said, you hear that in a lot of these cases, yes, with the serial killers. You know, that's, it's an addiction that usually gets them in and keeps them going. And even when they get caught, you would think, you know, it might slow them down or might change their thought process, but sometimes it actually gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and he tried to do the straight and narrow. I mean, he, like I said, he got married, had kids, moved back to Chicago because they let him out on good behavior or whatever. And he, you know, he was doing well in that prison system, I guess. He was able to get out, come back to Chicago, started working for his father-in-law, where, you know, he was, 1967, he was married, father of two, active member of the JC's charitable organization, highly paid manager of three Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises that his, I think his father-in-law actually owned those franchises. And then he named himself the Colonel.
Colonel.
He's not the Colonel.
Mm. Not even close.
Not even close, no. And then he was also, when he was younger, he like also had like, he worked at a mortuary. He was highly involved with the community, especially when he got back to Chicago. Like, he got really involved with the community. And there's pictures. Now, I can't remember. Which party was he affiliated with? Republican?
Democratic.
Democratic? Yeah. Okay. So he was, like, really involved with them. Where he was with, like, presidents, first ladies. Like, he was rubbing elbows with some serious people.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor, all that. He was in charge of parades, doing parades and stuff like that. So looking at him in that aspect, nobody would have thought the wiser of him. But little did they know that he was very sick and twisted. He also had like this fantasy of like, he got aroused by naked male corpses. I don't understand. That's kind of like a Dahmer thing too. I don't know what that. And then he had some homosexual encounters with another adult JC member. And he always seemed to focus on the younger teenage boys. And I don't know, did you see, Leah, did you see that he ended up there? It's not actually documented, but there's a boy that thought that he had an encounter with Gacy when he was in Wisconsin.
I believe I remember reading that in the book.
So there is supposed to be a kid he met. He thinks he's under the assumption that it was Gacy as a teen at a lakeside vacation resort here in Wisconsin. And during a fishing expedition, the older kid, which he assumes is Gacy, forced the younger kid to kill frogs. And he threatened to drown him, too. And he's looking back, he's thinking, like, that was Gacy. And somehow I survived that. Which, thank God he did, you know. But he's traumatized by it, obviously, as an adult. Gacy is known to have murdered 33 boys. But not all of them have been identified, either. So
looking for, I believe, five more.
Well, this is still an open case.
Yes. Yep.
So they found 29 boys in his house or near his house. Mm. And then they found four other bodies near the Des Plaines River, which is where we were talking about where he
is. It's right there. It's right there.
Yeah, where your wife grew up.
Yes.
But they don't have identification on all of them. And like all the way up until like 2018, they still had the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children were trying to find, like, they found these bodies. They reconstructed their images and they're trying to figure out who they are. They found one victim number 24 was James or Jimmy Paxton, who is a 16-year-old boy from St. Paul, Minnesota. who had hopped on a bus to Chicago the summer of 76. And then he called his mom and then disappeared, never to be seen again. But it seems like what Gacy was doing was, like I said, he had that construction business. And that's where he kind of like pulled these guys in. But, you know, why were these kids? It doesn't. I mean, it makes sense to me, but it doesn't. Like, what was his MO for all these guys? I mean, what? How did he lure them in?
Typically, he would lure them in. They were runaways or those who were on the streets a little bit more, and he would look to have sexual encounters with them. Robert Piest was very different in that sense, where that's not what Robert was doing. He was a good kid who was just working at a pharmacy and had heard that Gacy was a contractor, and he wanted to make a little bit more money because he was saving up to buy a car. And so Rob was not the typical victim of Gacy. Gacy did just a lot of finding on the streets, runaway young boys, vulnerable, needing a little bit of attention and whatnot. And that's what he would do. So Robert was a very different case. And I think that's why he got caught, because his parents immediately were looking for him. And the investigation took place very fast, where these other boys were missing for months or years, and there was really no way to trace that they were by Gacy or something happened with Gacy.
Now, did he have these kids living with him at all? Obviously not Robert, but the other.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I think he just lured them to his house or had them over in his garage and stuff, got them over there.
Right.
A lot of times it was for money too, you know.
Didn't he have some of them actually working for him though for a little while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, where did they have homes that they lived in? I mean, that obviously he kept them around for a while.
Yeah, they had places to live, but I don't believe they lived with him because he was married during a lot of the stuff.
But didn't he like convert his garage into something like a living quarters or no? Because some of the bodies were found in his garage, like under concrete that he had poured. And I don't know if he just kept that like an office, or if he had, because he had a separate office for his construction, right? There was like another construction building or something like that for his equipment, or was that actually his garage? I don't remember.
I don't remember much about his garage. I know more just about the crawl space and them having, and the fight, the legal fight that took place about needing to lift or move the house.
Right.
Well, is the house still there or is it gone?
It's still there.
Is it really?
But they lifted it, but they wanted to like move it or even tear it down to get to the bodies that they felt were underneath. They didn't know for sure if there was bodies underneath, but they were pretty sure at the time. And his attorneys fought that pretty hard, and they ended up lifting versus moving.
Well, didn't he work with the cops?
Oh yeah. So while he was on like surveillance shortly after the Rob Piest, while he was under investigation, he ended up, and I was wrong, I would also say that the house was razed, gotten rid of, so my bad. He ended up becoming buddies with those who were watching him and going out and having drinks with them, letting them know when he was like leaving and where he was going in case they got like separated or whatever. So he really got to be buddy buddy with everybody and got very chummy.
I get that, you know, the cops were, because he was rubbing elbows with all the people, like the mayor and whoever else, aldermans and stuff like that. But if you've got an eye on somebody, I mean, that's pretty smart on his part. to make friends with the people that are coming after you.
Sure.
But
they say keep your enemies close, right? So right. He's probably, right. He wants to make sure he knows what they're doing too.
But how dumb do you think those cops felt afterwards? Like, he was playing us the whole time, you know? Mm-hmm.
I don't think they believed that he would have done it because of the friendships that he had with everybody in there and how chummy he was already with
on the high power
leaders. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and he, if I remember correctly, he had like big parties in his house. Like he had he liked to barbecue. I don't know if he did any of the stuff like Dahmer did, but he had like a big barbecue pit in his backyard and he had people come over and, mm-hmm. you know, if I remember correctly, there's supposed to have been a body buried underneath the barbecue pit area. But you know, he's got all these guys coming over and the wife is just like, you know, they don't have a great relationship either. Mm-mm. Him and his wife, because mm-hmm. he doesn't want her. He wants men. And he just plays this role of actually being heterosexual to keep everybody happy and off his back. But he really is attracted to men. And then he ended up getting a divorce, though, mm-hmm. during all this, before he got caught, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then he was always saying that there's something wrong with, I forgot how he put it, underneath the crawl space, like there was mold or something, and that's what the smell was.
Yeah, moisture.
Yeah.
There is a house on the property, which is why I thought the house was still there, but apparently the house was torn down and now there's a new house that's built on the site. And it's like a three-bedroom.
Someone would actually live there, huh?
Yeah.
I would think that'd be hard.
I totally would. I would be there.
Do you think
question
it's haunted?
Is it haunted?
There's activity? Do you think? Something like
I
that.
I think there would be.
Why wouldn't
so much
there
negative
be?
Energy there, yeah.
I don't know if it would be intelligent haunt, though. I think it would be more residual.
Probably, like, yeah. I could see that,
you know,
yeah.
But still, that's kind of unnerving. I mean, as much as that would be kind of cool to live in that house, but to see that happening, it's almost heartbreaking, too, because now you're seeing things, like you hear things, that you're a boy screaming, he's dying, and you know what happened there. And all you're doing is hearing his death cries over and over and over again. How did he actually, because didn't he have like a way of messing with these kids to, you know, like he made it into like a party house, right? Where he would lure these kids in so they could drink and do drugs and be the cool.
Or
house.
He would do like tricks with them.
Yes. And that's how he handcuffed them as a magic trick. And that's how he killed mm-hmm. them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Acting like it was a magic trick and he strangled, he asphyxiated him.
Right.
And something else, but he did the magic trick. Like, look at this magic. And as soon as they were cuffed, that's how we killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was somebody that got away. Like, the kid used to be like a wrestler or something like that. And that's how they found out about the handcuffs. Like he told them that he tried to like put them in some, I don't know. I'm not into wrestling, so I don't know the names of them.
I'm not either.
But he put them in some kind of move and he's like, no, I'm a wrestler. I know how to get out of this move. But he tried to get the handcuffs on him, but ended up getting them on Gacy instead. I think Gacy got all bent out of shape because there goes this magic trick.
Yeah.
Was that Jeffrey Ringnall?
I want to say yes, because that sounds very, very familiar.
Just looking here. American memoirist who wrote 29 Below about surviving the 1978 attack by serial killer John Wayne Gacy.
I think that was the one that they interviewed for the Gacy Netflix series. I think that was him that was on there.
Mm.
I don't know. But then the other thing was he's known as Pogo the Clown, too.
Yeah.
And what was that whole thing about? Was that for the parades or was that just to have parties for kids?
He would go to kids' parties, is that?
Yeah.
I believe. Yes. How creepy is that?
Well, there was Pogo and then there was yet another alias. Patches. Pogo and Patches were his clown names. But he is creepy as a clown.
Yeah, he had paint. He had all these paintings of himself done as the clown.
Yeah.
All hanging up. Yeah, and a lawyer bought them all when he was convicted and burned them.
But you could, well, not all of them. Yeah. Not all of them, because there was, where was that? There are some of his paintings, because he did artwork while he was in prison. And they were showcased in auctions and online galleries. One of his clown masterpieces went under the hammer for $7,500 in Philadelphia. His Pogo paintings were, I guess they were in the 90s, they were going for like $250. And then all of a sudden it just skyrocketed. Like they're, nowadays they can sell as much as like $50,000 a piece. So they didn't get rid of all of them. They kept some of them. But he was trying to get money for those while he was in prison. And like the state was like, you're not getting paid for this. What are you, crazy? So whatever money that they got, I think they sent it to the victim's families. So they got the money. But yeah, he's, anybody know what happened to the costume? The Pogo costume?
No.
Didn't it, isn't it at the crime museum?
I don't know. Where is the crime museum? Is that in Philadelphia or is that is it called True Crime Museum?
It's Pogo the Clown National Crime Museum, Washington, D.C.
Oh. Interesting.
And punishment.
I smell a road trip.
Right? Weird. My family was just talking about going back to D.C. D.C. it comes. So did you guys know that? Okay, so they've made movies and stuff like that about him. Did you know that there is somebody that made a restaurant for like last meals of murderers?
There was what?
They made a restaurant. Yeah. So there, what was the name of it? I want to say it was like a pop-up restaurant in Japan. That's what it was, in Tokyo. So there was this pop-up restaurant that was Ninjin. I don't know. I'm not Japanese. I'm sorry if I slaughtered that one. But it's human restaurant. That's what it's translated to. And it was a pop-up restaurant in Tokyo that they had dining destination serves twists and blah, blah, blah. On the last meals of famous death row inmates.
Okay.
So they would serve those meals. So Gacy's was featured on the menu and their version of his serial killer final food request was a bucket of KFC chicken, fries, shrimp, and a pound of strawberries.
And a Diet Coke.
And a Diet Coke.
Don't forget that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was, I don't think it's up anymore, but it was a pop-up restaurant.
Interesting.
Right? I don't know how I feel about that.
I got something else to add to that. I was just looking, as we were talking about living in that house before, there's actually a film that I think we need to watch. There was a horror film titled 8213 Gacy House. It was released in 2010. It's based on paranormal investigators spending the night in a house built on the former site.
Oh.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
I'm interested
to see what that is.
So it's the address?
The name of the movie is 8213 Gacy House. And apparently the site was 8213 West Summerdale is where the house address was. So interesting.
It is interesting. Gotta watch that.
I'm gonna map quest it.
What'd you say?
I'm gonna map quest it.
MapQuest. Who the hell still uses MapQuest?
Brian does.
Train engineers.
That's okay. That's all right. You know, it was fine. It was kind of
was
funny.
That a flip phone still? Oh.
He's going to flip something. I don't think it's going to be the phone. I found online, I found the FBI Freedom of Information Act section, whatever, Privacy mm-hmm. Act section, and it was about John Wayne Gacy. Funny thing is, everything is redacted. I'm like, well, this doesn't tell you anything. But it was interesting that it was actually online, that you could see it, but it basically was just like, it even redacted his dad's name, which I thought was funny. I'm like, okay, why would you, or I should say his father-in-law's name. But they're talking about previous requests of information, assisting the FBI, that there were, the father-in-law was in operation of several Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa. So there's the Iowa thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was during 1966 to 1967, at which time Gacy's mother resided in Little Rock, Arkansas. And then information was also provided that Gacy was believed to have been previously affiliated with the Jaycees in Springfield, Illinois, and Waterloo, Iowa. Although no information has been developed. I mean, they're really not telling you anything. It was just all redacted, but I thought it was kind of interesting. They kept bringing up about the whole KFC, and the father-in-law was just like, no, he was a good worker. He didn't really have anything bad to say about his son-in-law. You know, I think as a father, you would want to sit there and say, well, this guy was like a serial killer, brought around my grandchildren, around my daughter, you know, but he didn't really seem to have anything negative to say about him, which is odd.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah. He not only did he like murder them, he like raped them, he tortured them. And I think we'll talk about, like, when we come back, we'll talk about where he was putting the bodies and how the cops were pulling bodies out and how they were in the basement and stuff like that. We'll talk about that when we come back. But, you know, and I don't know how these families, I mean, I feel bad for these families because, like, there are kids that are still not identified by him, which is really heartbreaking. But we'll come back from our break and we'll talk about all that stuff. Okay.
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 Yes, sir. Bye.
Bye. Bye. We'll come right back. So, speaking of stupid people, he wasn't really stupid. He was very intelligent, seems like.
Incredibly intelligent.
Yep.
Yeah. Did he go to college? Do you know? Or was it just like he did high school and that was...
So correct. There wasn't a college. And if he did go to college, it was not for long because I don't believe he graduated college. I know he graduated high school.
So can you imagine his class members, the graduating class, going, well, you know, I had biology with this guy and I had chemistry with this guy and I had social studies and math and I sat right next to him. He was my study buddy. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think I have anybody that has done anything really bad from my high school days. So I don't know how I'd feel about that. Like, was there something that like changed? What part of his life did this change, you know, to create this inside monster? And the other thing that fascinates me is how they flip-flop, like normal day-to-day activities to
completely switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how do they? I don't understand how they do that. And then flip right back out of it.
How do you flip your mind like that? You
Right.
know?
What side of your mind is that working with?
Yeah.
Right side, left side? Both at the same time? Is there a
It's scary.
percentage of what they like? How, what is it? 3%, 10% of our brain capacity that we use? Do you know offhand? I don't remember. It's very low.
They say it's 10%, but there's also they're also saying that we use all of our brain, just not like 100% capacity.
But they've taken serial killers' brains and they've
Right.
sliced them up and they've put them under the microscope and they look different than the average person.
Right. It also depends on what kind of trauma did they have growing up, because that can actually shrink your frontal cortex and do different things to your brain, depending on what kind of trauma that you're going through.
But he didn't have any trauma in his life. From
He
what
did.
it did he?
Because senior, John Wayne Gacy Sr., he was, no, I wouldn't say like he wasn't like this terrible guy, but he did go into alcohol rages and
Okay.
was a very harsh disciplinarian. But we're talking about somebody that was born in the 70s.
Right.
Right.
And I mean, I'm sorry, was he born? No, he was born in 40s, 42. And then
Yeah.
he died in 94. But
But he grew up in a time period that, you know.
right, where this wasn't maybe, I don't know how you want to put it, uncommon, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I
he
mean,
did hit his head when he was young and had blackouts and a blood clot in his brain. So
okay.
I just kind of wonder if there was some sort of brain trauma from hitting his head.
Right.
I don't know if that type of brain trauma would then cause you to become what he became,
Right.
or
I
if it
mean,
was already like in
but
motion at birth.
it's kind of like the football players that they have, the head trauma and stuff like that, where they, after they, well, most of them have retired, they had all these concussions and stuff like that.
CTE.
Yeah, and that affected them, and their family members noticed that there was like a complete switch of them. Like they would go in these rages,
And a
these
lot of them killed
blackouts.
themselves.
Yeah,
Yeah.
suicide is big on that.
A lot of them did.
Right. Like there's this I don't know. I don't, it could have been that he had the same thing as these football players. I don't know.
It could be.
And he apparently struggled a lot in school, and but he did graduate from Northwestern Business College, a little bit later in his life, so not right away after high school, but he went to a number of high schools and always struggled.
So he was always, they seem to be kind of like not very sociable. I mean, he seems sociable on the outside, according to like all these parties that he would have. He's trying to fit in with everybody, but yet,
He's a great liar.
yeah,
Very
yes.
lied a lot about of accomplishments that he may not have actually done. Really
Right.
manipulated people into like making him feel or feeling like he was more than maybe what he was to fit in.
Yeah, so he was still awkward, but trying to be that guy that everybody wants to be around. And it worked for a while, obviously. I mean, he got his picture with Carter's wife, President Carter. I mean, you gotta be up there to be able to get that close to the president's wife and be that sociable and stuff. But even still, I mean, I wonder what President Carter thinks now. Like, my wife was next to a serial killer. What did that bring to him? Like, here I'm the president and we have a serial killer that we're taking pictures with, but didn't know it at the time, obviously. But, it's, It amazes me on how well he could manipulate people and their thoughts about him, about his activities. You know, they just went hand in hand with that. So he ended up killing 33 boys, putting them in a crawl space because he didn't have a basement.
Right.
He just had a crawl space. But he had a bad back. So how do you get these boys in there? Because, I mean, some of these boys aren't tiny. I mean, I shouldn't say boys, young men, teenagers.
They were 14 to 21, I think.
Yeah.
The age range.
Right. And I mean, when my sons were 14, they, you know, they were well over 100 pounds. Not calling my children obese at any point, but I mean, to drag, we'll say at that time, they probably weighed 110, 115 pounds, but dead weight of 110, 115 pounds. And then in a crawl space, which how big is a crawl space? Maybe 2 feet, 2.5 feet, 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably about that.
And then you've got like the beams for the house underneath that you have to crawl underneath those. And then to dig, because he didn't just lay them out. He dug into the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So did he have help?
That's what they think.
I kind of wonder if he had, because at one time they said schizophrenia was a diagnosis.
I could see that.
Then they talked about like how he harbored rage, guilt, and sexual loathing because he denied his homosexuality for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up and stuff like that. And in fact, he didn't even open up to it till he was, I think, late teens, maybe 18, 19. And I forget the sentence that was in the book that I was reading, but he was with somebody who had said they were 100% going to get laid that night. And John's like, well, how can you be so sure? And he's like, well, you know, 50% sure it's going to be a female, but if not, then I know for sure I'm at least going to get laid tonight. And so that was almost what John was like, oh, hey, good idea. And that's kind of what he started doing at like gay bars and things like that.
Well, did he drive around too and get like prostitutes and stuff, male prostitutes?
Yep. I do believe, I know people are going to jump all over me for this one, when he went up for guilty for, or not guilty for reason of insanity,
mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder if that should have stuck. Because how was he sane?
Right.
But I do know that the legal portion of it is to be known as insane and actually have a verdict like that of not guilty by reason of insanity is that you have to not know what you were doing at the time of doing it.
You can. Is it the right and wrong?
Right. And I do believe he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he knew what he was doing at the time of doing it. But it makes you wonder, like, just because you know what you're doing and you know it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't necessarily mean you're sane.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The thing. I mean, how do you... I get that we don't use the institutions like we do, what we did at the time. Like at that time, we still had the institutions. Mm-hmm. They were still very prevalent in society. And I get that he did really bad things, but why wouldn't you? I mean, he've already went under psychological evaluations at the last prison. You know, wouldn't you want to do more of that in a more controlled environment? Like an institution?
Sure.
Not a prison? I mean, not to say the prisons are, you know, don't have the same capabilities, but I mean, he needed to be in the right environment. I don't know if prison was the right environment. He knew how to play that game to get himself out of it, obviously, because he was looking at a 10-year sentence in Iowa, but only did 2 years and then 12 months of probation.
Right.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
What kind of help did you actually get in those 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
So once again, we failed at keeping him where he should have stayed. All those guys could have survived, but there was a a lack of judgment in how they proceeded with him.
Right. And he was smart enough to know to go for boys that were maybe not missed right away, or even ignored more of a possible runaway.
Right.
Like, they weren't really being looked for. And if they were, it was like, oh, well, that person had issues and they probably took off. Right. Had he not gone after Rob, I sort of wonder how much longer this would have lasted for him.
Well, yeah, because he also, okay, he went after Rob, but he also had another guy that worked for him. A Robin Getcht, who ended up being the leader of a satanic cannibal serial killer, killers known as the Chicago Ripper Crew. Did you hear of those guys?
Yeah.
And he worked for Gacy. And he ended up, you know, being the leader of a 4-man gang of devil worshiping sexual sadists who raped, tortured, and cannibalized victims, often prostitutes. And they would either pick them up off the street or simply grab or force them into the group's van. And the Ripper Crew was suspected in the disappearance of 18 area women throughout 1981 and 82. So was this guy helping Gacy with these other men? And if so, how many did Gacy, did this guy actually help Gacy before they got caught? And did Gacy help these guys in this crew, you know, kill anybody? Because, like, these guys were, they're suspected of disappearances during that time period, but not to say that they didn't start way before that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chicago's a big town.
Right.
And people go missing all the time in Chicago. So who's to say that that wasn't something that started well before the 80s?
Sure.
So he, you were talking about how he's, you know, really smart and everything. He studied law at the correctional center that he was in Illinois when he was sentenced. And then he continued to say that at least 28 murders had been committed by employees who had keys to his house. Like, he didn't do it. It was his employees that did it. They killed these guys.
Well, there was a time he claimed that some of them happened when he wasn't even in town.
So, right.
You know.
Well, he had this one kid when he was in Iowa, this Donald Voorhees.
Jason's brother.
Jason's brother. I thought the same thing.
It's not a common name.
Yeah.
No, it's really not. No. But he ended up, Donald was 15 at the time, and he said that Gacy got him drunk and then forced him to perform oral sex on him, and that Gacy allegedly was known to, you know, tell them, I'll pay $50 for sex or whatever, and then he would blackmail the teenagers to keep them, the abuse going or whatever. But Voorhees told his dad, a friend of Gacy's, so his dad knew Gacy, and they were part of the JCs, and that what he had done or whatever. And then another 16-year-old victim went, him and another 16-year-old victim went to the police, and that's when he was arrested. And then he was indicted on that one count. But then he ended up paying an 18-year-old employee to beat Voorhees up, to tell him to, you know, tell him to stay out of the court. But that didn't work. He still got caught. But poor Donald got beat up. So He served 2 years, got his high school degree there, it looks like. And then he excelled as a head cook there. And then he got off in 1971 and took off back to Chicago, where he had 12 months probation. How do you go and get out of jail in Iowa and do probation in Illinois? How does that can you even do that?
Yeah.
Back then you probably could. I don't know if you still can. What,
sure you
depends
can.
What the stipulations are of that probation. I believe it was because he had to go live with his mom or something, right? That was the stipulation, is he had to live.
Oh, so as
in
long
Chicago,
as you have a family member there, you can.
Something like that, if I remember right. He was granted parole with the conditions that he had to go back to Chicago and he had to live with his mother or something like that. If I remember that correctly. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that's what I had read when like you said, which I thought was odd, how little time he actually served of a 10-year sentence. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Which brings me back to my earlier thing, is at what point could this have been prevented or changed some of the history by just one thing happening where maybe he didn't get out in 12 months, you know?
Right. Well, and he ended up like getting high up in the facility too in Iowa. You know, besides being the head cook, like he had other things that he could do, which made him look like the model prisoner. So they're like, oh yeah, he's changed. He's so much better. He's, you know, he's going to be ready for society, you know, because all he did was in their eyes, he, you know, had sex with a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that poor kid has to live with that. And knowing that you're out on the streets and so is the person that did this to you. And you can come around the corner at any point and there he is. And he already beat you up. He already paid somebody to beat you up. So what else is he capable of doing? Is he going to, you know, pay somebody to kill you? Or your family? Right. Or both? But, When I was watching the documentary on him, there's like an apartment building that he would be in charge of that his mom was in. I don't know if you guys know about that one. So he would take care of like the maintenance of the building. And there was a kid that lived there and he's like, yeah, I would see Gacy like digging up the yard. And like at one point he's like, there was no bush there. And all of a sudden there's a bush there. And it wasn't where he was doing it during the day. He was doing it at night. And the cops were kind of looking at it like, we want to, they did like go there and dig through the yard, but in an area that the kid told them was not part of it. Like they completely avoided the area that he told them. This is the area that I saw him digging at night right by these bushes. Go check that out. And they went completely opposite of that. And so the one cop is like, I wonder if there are more victims that we don't know about.
Almost sounds like it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are.
But the city.
I don't think he was honest about how many.
I don't think so.
Right.
No.
Doubtful.
No. And the funny thing is like this, they tried and the city said, no, you can't dig there. You can't. Why not? You know, and where is the owner of the building? If you know that you possibly have victims in your property, why would you not?
Because he was the one under the bush.
That's true. Could be.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But why would they call people over to investigate it and they don't even listen and look in the right spot? Were those people part of his
crew?
Crew yeah. that you know looking yeah. the other way.
Was he paying some of those
at that
cops
point,
off?
Well, like we said, you know, he was a prominent figure doing all these other things in the community and stuff. So, you know, I mean, someone said something and they were like, ah, no, it's not even possible, and they just kind of looked the other way or like don't take it seriously,
right?
You know,
yeah,
which seems like that was probably a lot of the problem of not catching him sooner is no one. suspect it. No one would suspect it, you know, and that was part of his cover. You know, he was smart. He was educated. You know, he was well-spoken. Everybody liked him. I mean, he had the perfect cover, you know, so.
Plus you grease a few palms.
Sure. Sure.
With some green stuff.
Money talks.
Right. I turn my head. I see nothing. Mm-hmm. I know nothing. And, you know, no offense to those that live in Chicago area, but we know that it's not all a bed of roses.
Well, you keep in mind what the time frame right. was too in the 70s and, you know, 60s, 70s, whatever, you know, was most of it in the 70s. But do you think somebody could get away with that today to that extent? Or do you think that with the way things are now with either the justice system once they are caught or right. just the alertness of everybody and stories like this that people remember that maybe draw a red flag where something like this couldn't happen today? Or do you think that right now, as we sit here, there's someone out there that is getting away with it? I mean, I'm not talking about one or two or somebody killed somebody thing. Right. I'm talking serial killer, 30 plus victims somewhere.
Well, here's the other thing we talk about, you know? Now versus then. We have so much more technology now.
Sure. Yep. Exactly. Like, that's what I mean.
Everybody's right. got like a camera somewhere in their house. It seems right. like you got it on your door. You right. got it inside your house. You got it outside your house. Right. You know, the businesses, they have them on every corner, you right. know? So no.
yep.
then he didn't have that. Like, he could walk around with a dead body on a, you know, middle of the night. Nobody's going to know because everybody's sleeping. Right. Mm-hmm. And those that do are not going to question it.
Here's something to think about too on that same thing. I was listening to something else and they said this, that back in turn of the century, the early 20s, whatever, 1800s, whatever the case was, when you had murders like that, people were getting away with it because there wasn't the social media. There wasn't news. News wasn't traveling. You could kill somebody in one city, hop on a train, go to another city and kill somebody. And by the time news got to the other city that this had happened somewhere, you're in another city, you right. know? So think about yeah. like the axe murders. They connected it that way, like Valeska and Lizzie Borden.
Yeah.
How do you know it wasn't the same crime ring, or so to speak, because different parts of the country, you don't know when you start hearing things after the fact, like now we can look this stuff up and you start seeing things that there's a pattern that right. back then nobody could connect. And it's so far past the point. Now we're just talking about it. There's no way you're going to solve it. But mm-hmm. it's interesting to see that the way technology is now, you're right. We have all that at our disposal. And right. Does it make us smarter? Or does it just give us that false sense of, yeah, you know, that we know everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you think, oh, well, I got these cameras and I'm safe, or, you know, it's just like, you know, they give those victims, you know, a piece of paper saying that you cannot have contact with this person within certain amount of feet. Really? A piece of paper is really going to save my life?
Right.
You know, I mean, right. let's be realistic. It's mm-hmm. not going to happen. That piece of paper means nothing to that person. They want you. Same with this, you know, with Gacy. He wants this victim. He's going to get this victim one way or the other. And so if he's going to go and bring it to the party house, let's go back to the house. Let's have some beers. Let's play some games. You know, you can hang out here. You're underage. Nobody will know. I'm the cool guy. Look at me like, you know, your friend. I'll take care of you. You got a place to stay. Of course, these kids are like, I'm out of town, or my parents kicked me out and now I'm running away. I need a safe place. Instead of living on the streets, this guy is offering me four walls and a roof and then food, and I can drink too and do drugs and not get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they're going to do it. And then, you know, it's like the fly trap, the Venus fly trap. It's like, okay, I'm going to suck you in, and then wham. Close that mouth and you're dead. You're gone. Nobody's going to know. And then he goes into his little crawl space, digs a hole, throws the body in, and waits for the next person. And it just keeps going and going and going until you can't dig anymore because you're full, and then what? And people start, you know, they're coming over and they're like, what the heck is that smell?
Right.
You know, and the bodies is piling up so much that they're not even, you know, fully decomposed. So,
gross.
You know, they're just, let's put another body on top of another body on top of another body and it'll be fine. Go to sleep. It'll be fine. And then these cops come in there once they did get caught and they're trying to pull these bodies out and they're like, oh my God, this is like a mass grave. Where do we start? How do we get this? Like they had to like, you know, the first they went in to the crawl space and then they realized, oh my God, this is so much bigger than what we thought. We now need to cut holes in the floors to properly get these guys out of here.
I remember as a kid when he got busted, I was in Illinois when he got caught. It was on the news. I totally remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, can you imagine the neighbors?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is happening right now.
It was amazing to me how nobody saw him with all of these kids going in and nobody coming out. That always amazed me. Nobody saw anything. And then all of a sudden, just like, and all of a sudden the smell, but nobody suspected anything. And believe me, that's a busy, I mean, that's a subdivision, but nobody saw. You know, it's just, it's interesting to me.
Well, and you know, it's like suburbia, you know, I mean, it's not like now where you're like, I know exactly what my neighbors are doing. I'm paying attention to what my neighbors are doing. Back then it's like, it's your own business, your house. I don't want to know what you're
People
doing.
People left their doors open, their cars. Open. No one cared.
Nobody cared.
That was the '70s.
No as long as my kids are back in the house, when the light comes, street light comes on, we're good.
Yep.
If we don't, then I'm going to have a problem, you know.
Street lights on, get home.
They better be within yelling distance. They hear me scream their names. Mm-hmm. They better come running, you know. But nowadays, no, you can't do that. But back then, your neighbors were your neighbors. You hung out if you hung out. You didn't, you didn't. And, you know, did they really pay attention of when was he bringing these kids in? Was he bringing them in during the day?
Yeah,
or was he bringing them in at night?
At night, yeah. Who knows?
Because at night, they're not going to pay attention.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that person. I'm going to call in, you know, this looks really suspicious. But then, you know, I call it in and then I'm the idiot that nothing's happening. You're being paranoid. You know, you're going to be that neighborhood snitch.
So, all right.
Hi.
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 So, yeah, I mean, back then, times were different.
Yep, absolutely.
But, you know, there's still bodies out there that don't have a name to them. And I'm surprised in that, too. Like, you're telling me after all these years, we're like 44 years later, that there's no DNA. Like, you've got a missing child out there. That we haven't gone up to these families and go, look, I need DNA from all of these missing families and put it into the system. I don't know if that's like a, is that too much to ask to have that? I mean, if that was my family member, be like, please take my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want you to find my family. So here, please take it. But, you know, it's like they're not even offering that.
So back then it was what, birth certificates, fingerprints, and dental records. That's right. It, you know.
Or, you know, marking tattoos or scars or whatever.
Yeah, no one had tattoos. You know, hardly anybody had tattoos in the 70s.
Right. And then these bodies were already decomposing. So, I mean, what are you going to actually find on that? It would be the dental records if that, you know, if he didn't put anything on there. I think he put something on there, like lye or something that was going to help, you know, break these bodies down a little bit in his mind. But who knows? I don't know. He's an interesting character for sure. I wouldn't want my children to be around Pogo the Clown, but you know. And it's not anything against clowns. He's a creepy looking clown, you know. But he ended up dying in prison with a lethal injection.
52?
54?
52?
He ended up Yeah, he was. Let's see. He was 40. Where's my
paper? Where's the expert on this? Come on, Leah. How old is he?
Right? I know. I'm like struggling with that paperwork here.
The experts, you don't even know how damn old he was. Like, he's a fucking expert. Huh?
1994, May 10th, 1994, Statesville, Illinois.
Yeah, 52. So I, yeah.
52.
Yeah. He wasn't a big guy, though. That was the one thing I did find out. That's the one thing they didn't redact on this FBI thing, was his demographics. Let's see if I can find it real quick. He was like 210 pounds. Not very big at all.
And like he was 210 at the time of death or at the time of doing the stuff.
Caucasian male, 5'9", 218, gray hair, blue eyes. And that was, it just shows his date of birth. And this was, I don't know, it doesn't have a date.
His arrest photo, he was chubby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must have been like closer to his death time or whatever. But that's all we got for John Wayne Gacy right now. One minute.
Other than his final words.
Which were?
Kiss my ass.
Wow. That's a way to go out there.
Yep.
All right. Well, until next time, guys. For our believers, keep believing. For our skeptics, keep us grounded. Yep. Kathy, and your host.
Yep. And kiss my ass. Oh,
no. There we go. That's going to be
my new sign off. All right.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
I looked that up in Japanese.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. Please email us with your thoughts on this and any of our previous episodes. And if you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, email us at soupit@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of Wicked Darkness.